You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
18 years. That's how long the manuscript of an oral history Kenneth Turan wrote about the Public Theater and its founder Joseph Papp lay hidden in a drawer. The manuscript, which included interviews with 160 actors, writers, and directors connected with the Public Theater, was recently resurrected and revised by Mr. Turan and published by Doubleday under the title Free for All. Kenneth Turan is a film critic for the LA Times and, as I'm sure you're aware, a regular contributor to NPR's Morning Edition, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hi.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Why did this book sit in a drawer for so many years?
That's a good question. Well, some of those years, you know, the book was killed, basically. And some of those years, that was so painful to me.
It was killed by Joe Papp himself,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it? Why didn't he want it published?
You know, that's an interesting question. He was not in a frame of mind to do. I handed in really a rough first draft. And the way these things work, when you collaborate with someone, and Joe was the co-author, there's a back and forth that goes on. And Joe had just found out that he had the prostate cancer that killed him. He just found out that his son Tony had the AIDS that killed him. And, you know, from my point of view, in retrospect, he just wasn't in the frame of mind to do to kind of dig into this and say, okay, you know, what needs to be done here? He was always mercurial, you know, under the best of circumstances, and it just was more in his nature to say, okay, this is finished.
So it had nothing to do with whether he was happy or unhappy with some of the things that people you'd interviewed had said about him.
Well, probably that was part of it, but I mean, some of that, like I say, there's always a back and forth that goes on. You know what I mean? When you collaborate with someone. But, you know, basically the book that, you know, we have here is basically the book that I wrote then.
And was it intended to be something of an autobiography? Because, we said, it's written by Kenneth Turan and Joseph Papp.
Yeah, he wanted, you know, to be part of the process. You know, it's really a history of the theater. And I think there's parts about his life that are in there as they relate to his life in the theater. I mean, I put a lot of stuff in about his childhood and his young adult years because I felt that the theater really comes kind of directly out of that.
It had been his idea to write the book, and he hired you?
Yes.
It was because you were doing stuff that he felt some kind of connection to?
No, he really didn't know who I was. I mean, our agent, Kathy Robbins, put us together. He came to her, wanted to do this book, and she thought of me, I think partly because, I mean, I had done collaborations with people before. I'd worked with Patty Duke on her autobiography. I had done stuff like this before. But also, even though Joe and I had a gap in our ages, we basically had the same upbringing. We were both born in Brooklyn, sons of Yiddish-speaking immigrant parents. So even though there were 20 years difference in our age, we had very similar upbringing, and I think Kathy thought, and I think accurately, that we would kind of connect with each other on that kind of a level.
What wound up reviving the book? I know his last wife, his fourth wife, Gail Merrifield Papp, was involved. Did she come to you and say, I hear there's a manuscript?
No. I mean, she had read the book, you know, and I think she had felt that there was some value in it. But, I mean, like I say, it took me years to want to look at it again. It was so painful that it was killed. That's why it sat in a green box that had formerly held hiking boots. And I just wouldn't even look at it for really 6, 7, 8 years. And finally, I just wrote Gail a letter. I sat down. I said, you know, this book is too good to die. Is there not some way that we can bring this book back? And she wrote back that she thought there was. And then over the course of years, you know, it happened.
There are some people, I'm sure, who say, well, how would Joe Papp have felt about it being revived after he wanted you to kill it?
I think he would be fine with the book. I really do. Like I say, I think he was not himself when he killed it.
The New York Times has called Joseph Papp one of the most influential producers in the history of the American theater. Can you give us a quick summary of his accomplishments for listeners who may not be completely familiar with all that he did?
Yeah, I mean, I think his total is 350 plays, but really it's not even that. He founded Shakespeare in the Park, which is a real New York institution. Plays like Hair, A Chorus Line, No Place to Be Somebody, That Championship Season, The Normal Heart, Short Eyes. None of these plays would have really existed the way we know them without Joe. And also there are the actors, Meryl Streep, George C. Scott, Martin Sheen, Raul Julia, people he gave their first job to. You know, he just had a gift for knowing who to be behind.
And he also gave first exposure to many playwrights.
Yes. I mean, David Rabe was, you know, definitely his career is intricately intertwined with the Public Theater. And, you know, other playwrights as well. He just he saw things in people that other people didn't see.
Wasn't he one of the first producers to move plays that had started in the nonprofit world onto Broadway?
Yes, he was. And, that's a Chorus Line, which did make that move, ended up making tens of millions of dollars and really supported the public for years. And he just kind of figured out that this was a good thing to do.
Also, Hair.
Hair, yes.
I wonder if he was inspired at all by the way the Royal Court Theatre in London worked, giving a production a one-month trial run and having that determine whether or not it would move to the West End.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure, it's possible. But, I think, Joe was an instinctive person. He just had these notions of what should be done. And then he went around trying to make it happen.
My guest is Kenneth Turan. And his book is Free for All, Joe Papp, The Public and the Greatest Theater Story Ever Told. Written by Kenneth Turan and Joseph Papp. And the book's title, Free for All, can be interpreted in several ways. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, that's intentional. I mean, one way, free for all, free Shakespeare for everyone in the city was the cornerstone of Joe's belief. He believed in this the way, Jesuits believe in the Pope.
But he came up with that after he founded the Public Theater.
No, the Shakespeare in the Park came first. He started in a little church, Free Shakespeare in this little church on the Lower East Side, the Emmanuel Church. And then he ended up with a mobile theater. He had a flatbed truck. He put like a rudimentary stage on the back of the truck. They would drive around to parks in the far boroughs, putting on Shakespeare, not the bastardized versions, but actual Shakespeare for people in the neighborhoods. And then he ended up in Central Park, and they stayed there, and they put on Shakespeare in the Park, and that freedom. The fact that, he got into this famous fight with Robert Moses about whether he should charge for Shakespeare. Moses wanted him to charge, and he said, no, I won't do it. So the free-for-all, part of the reason is that because he believed in things being free.
And Moses wanted him to charge because that would keep the riffraff out?
Partly that, and partly felt, they were kind of wearing out the grass, and they were kind of, expenses that the city would have to, endure to keep this free. And he said, well, no, why doesn't everybody pay a little bit?
The other side, of course, is that it has probably brought more money to the city than anybody could have imagined.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this thing was like nobody, only the people wanted this. The establishment was not behind Shakespeare in the Park the way it is now.
On the other hand, Free for All also suggests something rather chaotic.
Well, not only chaotic, what I was thinking of was also that Joe was always mixing it up with people. Joe did not have a tranquil career. There's a story that I really love. One of my favorite stories, one of his playwrights told me that Joe came up to a party and started chatting with him. And the playwright was kind of aghast. He said, Joe, we just had this knockdown, drag-out fight just a few weeks ago. We were yelling and screaming at each other. Why are we chatting pleasantly? And Joe looked at him and said, if I didn't speak to the people I had fights with, I'd have no one to speak to.
He'd had a fight with Sam Shepard over his treatment of True West.
Yeah, that's one of the real interesting stories in the book, the chapter on True West, which was the first, it was not the premiere. The premiere had been out in San Francisco, but it was the first New York production. Tommy Lee Jones, Peter Boyle, a great play, great actors. And it was like maybe the worst production the play ever got. And Sam Shepard was in Texas and didn't fly. Everyone wanted Sam Shepard to come in. And he just refused to come in for the production, and the production just withered and died.
One of the playwrights said, Joe said that if he hadn't become a playwright, he'd have been a murderer. He had a sharp tongue.
He was tough. I mean, he was really tough.
Now, you mentioned some of the people who were associated with him that you talked about. I mean, it's unbelievable. Bob Fosse is in this book, Colleen Dewhurst, Raoul Julia, Madeleine Kahn, George C. Scott. They've all died, but are among the greatest actors that ever lived. Meryl Streep, James Earl Jones, Kevin Kline, Martin Sheen. But you also include people like Mayor John Lindsay.
Yeah, no, just because Joe got inextricably involved with the city is partly when he acquired the Public Theater building. Joe always felt it was interesting. He wanted to be in the center of things. He wanted to be central to the city. He didn't want to be a fringe person. He didn't want to be that nice little person who does that nice, well-meaning stuff. He wanted to be right in the middle of things.
Were you surprised at how open most of these people were when they were talking to you and how much personal information they were willing to divulge?
To a certain extent. I mean, Joe had written letters to everyone encouraging them to tell everything. And, I found as a journalist, sometimes you hit people just at the right period of time. where it's not so long in the past that they can't remember, but not so recent that they just want to hold back.
Well, I mentioned Martin Sheen. He told you that if Joe Papp hadn't called him when he was working in a Staten Island car wash under his given name, Ramon Estevez, that he would not have had, he might have had the breakthrough, but it wouldn't have happened as quickly as it did.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great story because, they called for Martin Sheen at the gas station and they all said, no one by that name works here. And finally, the owner, a day or so later, said to him, do you ever go by another name? Because there was a call for this guy, Martin Sheen. Is that you? And he was, and he called Joe back. But, you know, Joe
to play Hamlet.
Yes, in you know, what became known as the Naked Hamlet. But Joe had a gift for talent. He just saw,
Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
She showed up an hour and a half late for an interview, but he still signed her.
Yeah. No, I mean, Rosemary Tischler tells a great story that even though she was an hour and a half late, she wasn't, it was her first big interview for her first part, and she was walking kind of calmly down the street. And, you know, Rosemary, who was a casting director, said, you know, this woman is so centered. If she has talent, there's going to be no stopping her. And it turned out she had talent, and there was no stopping her.
You mentioned that you and Joseph Papp had similar early lives, but he didn't want to talk about his childhood.
No, he really didn't. I think there's a sense sometimes that people glamorize poverty, but for Joe, who grew up in really dire poverty, the kind of poverty where in the middle of the night the family would move to another apartment because they couldn't afford the rent, that kind of poverty. And I remember so vividly the time we talked about it when that session was over, he walked me to the door of his apartment and he looked at me and he said, I'm never talking about this again. And it didn't just mean to me. He just meant to anybody.
And you suggested that he might not have been so intent on making Shakespeare available free if he hadn't had these kinds of experiences when he was younger.
Yeah, and also he in high school, a teacher kind of connected with him and introduced him to Shakespeare, and it really kind of changed his life. He saw the possibility for other kinds of things in his life, and he really felt that what had worked for him could work for anybody.
He took over the theaters at Lincoln Center for a while. Why did that turn out to be such an unhappy chapter in his life?
You know, he never felt comfortable there. It was part of it. I mean, it was an uptown place. It was a place where people came in mink coats. And Joe was just, it just didn't quite connect with him. And I think it kind of removed his focus from a certain amount from the public downtown. And it just didn't quite work. It might have worked. It wasn't doomed to failure, but it just didn't.
Do you think he would be pleased with the way the Public Theater has continued to operate?
I think so. I mean, again, I live in Los Angeles. I don't really know all the ins and outs.
For example, Richard Foreman has a play there right now.
He would be happy with that, I'm sure. You know, but I mean, the fact that the Public is still there, still thriving, still doing adventurous work, this is what Joe had in mind, and that is still happening as far as I can tell.
And now everybody seems to want to be in a Shakespeare in the Park production.
Yeah, you know,
they get superstars.
I know. It's become the thing, you know. Like I say, it used to be controversial, and now it's become the establishment.
Just one more thing before you go. What do you think knowledgeable theater goers will be most surprised by in this book?
I think the distance that Joe came, I think people don't really realize how deep in poverty he came, how hard those early years were, the amount of fortitude it took to get to even the Mobile Theater, to get to Shakespeare in the Park. It's just astonishing. And I think people really probably think he had some kind of a leg up, and he had no kind of leg up. He came out of nowhere.
Kenneth Turan has been a film critic for the Los Angeles Times since 1991 and director of the Los Angeles Times Book Prizes since 1993. He teaches nonfiction writing and film criticism at the University of Southern California, and I'm sure you are familiar with his voice from his Friday appearances on Morning Edition on National Public Radio. His latest book is not about films. It's about Joseph Papp, the Public, and the greatest theater story ever told, called Free for All, and it is published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. This was great.